Welcome to the Return to India podcast, everyone. Today we have with us Mr. Sudhir Bandaru from Hyderabad. Sudhir is the CTO at Shortlist, a startup in Hyderabad which is into recruiting solutions. He has a history of working across multiple domains and product-based companies of all sizes for over a decade in the US and India. He recently returned to India and is part of our Return to India community, helping folks return back to India, especially entrepreneurs. Let's talk to him about his journey of returning back and what we can learn from it. Thanks, Sudhir, for joining us, and welcome to the show.
My pleasure, Mani.
First off, congratulations on being nominated among India's 100 Great People Managers by Forbes India.
Thank you.
Great. We'll start with some basics, and we'll talk about your journey, and basically the idea is what we can learn from your whole being in the US and turning back journey. So, Sudhir, when did you return back to India?
It's almost 2 years and 1 month. I returned in 2017, August.
Okay. And how long were you in the US and what were you doing there?
So I initially went to US for my master's in 2002 and was there for like 15 years. And after my master's, I had all of my career in various cities in US and states in US.
So you did your schooling in India and growing up in India, I believe, isn't it?
Yes, I did my schooling here in India and then my bachelor's in India and only went there for my master's in 2002.
Okay. What was your idea about US before moving in? Because, you know, we all lived in the 90s and there was this big aspiration about moving to the US and, you know, you are kind of a rebel now moving back, I think most of us. So, you know, I'd like to see what was that context before moving out, you know? What were your aspirations? What were your thoughts? And what were you looking forward to?
Yeah, it's interesting. US was more like, you know, what I was watching in movies, English movies, and thinking US is like that everywhere. And I felt like that was living the dream. And most importantly, after my bachelor's, I had only two options. Either clear my GATE exam and get a 10K to 15K salary a month, or go to US, do your master's, and like maybe make 10 to 20 times your salary. So it was, going to US was most treated like a success. I don't think it was much of an option, really. Definitely it felt like exciting to go there, hearing the stories from family and friends and watching in movies. But going to US also was very hard for me. I'm the only child to my parents. I never really was so much worried about going to US, but it was a very big sacrifice on my parents' end, which I'm only understanding as I became a parent of two children.
How did you feel once you moved in? I'm sure it was a lot of excitement and everything, but then, you know, what happened there?
Yeah, definitely the first few days was a lot of excitement and there was some fear, anxiety, because you have to live in a new place with not a single person whom I knew before. Once I got settled into my apartment with some of the friends who moved in from Hyderabad, then it kind of felt better. And then, like, you know, we kind of, the fear and anxiety were slowly going away as I got into starting my classes in the college, university, and all of those things. But eventually, then I had to find my job to pay for my next semester onwards. I took the fee for my first semester. Of course, my dad was ready to pay for the upcoming semesters, but I think it was more like a success thing. And like, yeah, I can do it. I want to pay it myself. I wanted to take care of myself now. My dad spent until now. So finding the job, like, you know, getting into this mindset of doing these odd jobs was very difficult. But then everybody else were doing it, and it was like kind of normal eventually. Once I found a job, then got into the classes at my university and all of those things, then it was time to share the happiness with family by taking pictures and sharing it to them. It was not so much of a digital age, right? You have to take the prints and then send it to them by mail. And they used to be happy. And talking to them was like a hell of a pain, because like, it used to be like the calling cards were very expensive. It used to be like 20 minutes for $5, which was a lot, which is the money I used to make in 1 hour, earning in 1 hour. So it was very hard. And definitely, I'm like, no, the most people in my room were like homesick, because that was the first time they were moving away from family. But luckily, as I said, I was brought up in a boarding school from the age of 7 for lack of better education in my city. And so that homesickness was not real for me, which was a better part. But otherwise, I'm like, I definitely learned a lot about, like, you know, being independent and understanding the value for money, because I started earning to pay for my fees it was great.
Obviously, things have changed a lot now, and it's a lot more easier. But you know, were there any particular struggles for you, like for example, blending in culturally and otherwise being there?
Yeah, a lot of cultural and accent issues, language issues. Though I'm like, you know, we all speak English. Mm-hmm. Trying to find out the homemade food or like something closer to homemade food. Going into a store and asking for tortilla instead of tortilla was very fun. And driving like 100 kilometers just to drink a favorite Indian chai was memorable. So struggles were there, mainly missing the home food, like, you know, missing that homeliness around, definitely blending with some of the cultural aspects of the university. All of those things were a little tough. As I said, even getting into these odd jobs, I used to do pizza delivery for a few days. So it was difficult trying to get into it. But then I said, like, yeah, let me do it. And then people were treating pizza delivery as a very successful job because you have a car, because you can do pizza delivery.
Interesting, interesting. And you work with a lot of companies there, very interesting ones. How was the work culture? I see that you've grown a lot there while being in the US. And what is your opinion about the tech culture there, or the work culture, basically?
Yes. Yeah, I was in all of the big companies in the beginning. And like, I was at AT&T, I was at Hewlett Packard, I was at Merrill Lynch, which was acquired by Bank of America. I was through the recession, 2008, subprime mortgage recession, all of those things. From the culture perspective, I started my career in US. So I never really had a taste of the culture in work culture in India in the first place. Although I've been hearing a lot of stories from people who have been coming from Infosys and Accenture to US, and I've been hearing some of their stories, but I never experienced the culture myself firsthand. Coming to the tech culture, big companies, the culture is very different, very corporate-ish, very relaxed. Most companies are very kind of, hard to say this, but like, you know, big companies, it varies by teams, but it's a very comfortable, laid-back culture, even in tech. Especially given the kind of roles that we got to work, given our immigration status. I don't know, probably it was because of the immigration status and not having a full-time job. The kind of work we were doing was not really satisfactory at big companies. That is when I moved to a smaller company, a startup in Bay Area, closer to San Francisco. And that is where the work culture, I got to set the culture there because I was the first engineer at that startup again. Okay. In the office. Okay. So I got to set up the culture. It was amazing working with like a lot of smart people, both in technology and outside technology. Met a lot of amazing people, made great friends. And my CEO, Matt Schnurk, was like, he bootstrapped his own business that was a startup. Mm-hmm. And the same CEO is the CEO and is the current co-founder of Shortlist. That is how I got into Shortlist.
Got it. So you had that spark of entrepreneurship in you, I guess, because you felt more comfortable working in a, you know, a small establishment, unlike in a big company, and, you know, making an impact for yourself, isn't it?
Exactly. Bigger company, it was hard to see the impact of my work, which is why I shifted to a smaller company. Again, this was like a huge risk because I transferred my H1 to a startup where I was the first immigrant in the startup. So I felt like I have to move on, irrespective of my immigration status, to really enjoy my work. So culture-wise, it's very different depending on the company and the kind of location. But overall, it's not like overly, what to say, not so much of a pressure cooker environment, I would say, in big companies. And in small companies, there are some startups where you have that kind of environment. But I was fortunate enough to be in a place where I got to set the culture without that overburden.
Got it. So let me ask you the most important question. When did you start thinking about returning? And, you know, what was the trigger behind it, if at all there was one?
Yeah, good question. I always told my family and friends that I'm always going to return to India, but I never told when. I always said like a few years. And then when I bought my home in US, people were like, hey, you said you're going to go back to India. Why are you buying a home? I said, but I never said when. So I was living in US as if I was going to settle there forever. I never planned myself that as if I'm going to move after that certain date or something. I got married, I had two children, I bought my home and everything. But I always used to tell, yeah, I'm coming to India sometime soon. I'm coming to India sometime soon. What triggered was mainly my job. So when I first knew about this job, it was mainly about helping companies in India and Kenya. So I said, yeah, this is something associated with India. Let me think more about it. And it was the same CEO mm-hmm. of my old startup, who is also the co-founder of this startup. I said, like, no, I like the person. I enjoyed working with him. I would like to work with him. And then definitely it is something in India. I thought I'll have an opportunity to make multiple trips to India with this company. Then we started building the team in Hyderabad and everything. And then it felt like my American co-founders, they moved to India. Think because the team was growing big and they had moved from Washington, D.C. Bay Area to India. And they were saying, like, when are you going to move, Sudhir? We are in your country. You got to be closer to the team. And I said, okay. Then it was a very, very, very tough choice. It wouldn't be as easy what I'm telling right now. Mm-hmm. The biggest choice was, like, no, I kind of got into a very comfortable zone in U.S. Mm-hmm. with my green card. I crossed all my immigration hurdles, got my citizenship. Okay. Very comfortable in every way. Been in Bay Area for 10 years, 10 plus years. So you kind of get used to it so well. And my daughter was going to school there for 2 years. So it was very hard for me to say to move back. But I said, like, if not now, when? That was the biggest question I asked myself. If not, I'll tell many people, like, you know, they try to move to India when the parents are aging and when there is a need for them to move to India. Mm-hmm. But what I realized myself is when there is a need, you are actually taking care of them. You're not actually spending time with them. You're not hanging out with them. So that was the biggest thing. I said, like, man, if this is a trigger, this is a good trigger. This is not a bad trigger, right? This is a good trigger. Let me take care of this opportunity and, like, no, really make this move. And my kids are too small. I have to make it. And that was the biggest trigger. And my company really supported me a lot in many ways during the transition.
That's awesome. I think you were more fortunate than many others who are trying to move back, because one of the biggest blocks for them is to find a job when they're moving back to India. So I think you had that sorted out initially. So, you know, that's a good thing in one way, I guess.
Yeah, couldn't ask for more. I totally agree with that.
Great. So how did the preparation happen, as in, you know, the tactical side of things? You know, you mentioned you had your citizenship, your green card and everything sorted out. You had your house. So, you know, leaving all of that, how did that preparation start off? How was that process?
Yeah. So the biggest part of my move was about the house, which I need to sell. Mm-hmm. It was a big debate between if I want to sell it or keep it, because I was more thinking of coming to India as an expat. But at the same time, that was exact time, like, when the elections were happening and there was so much talk around, like, the house prices are, like, high and they're going to go down. Trump is going to come and, like, the house market is going to collapse. All of these things, like, so many rumors, so many discussions, right? I said, like, no, let me keep it very certain. I don't want to be very uncertain about this big asset. And I said, like, no, first thing, I sold my home and moved to a rental home. And then eventually planned my transition. After once I sold my home, I got everything cleared up, whatever I don't want. And then once I was in a rental home, it was a lot easier for the transition. Everything else, we have a lot of stuff, belongings, and we always, I originally got scared. But once I started doing it, it was a very easy choice. Either you throw it away, either you sell it, or you bring it to India. That's it.
Correct.
You only have three choices, three buckets.
Right.
Yeah, bigger stuff. I put everything on Craigslist. Just one opened everything on Craigslist, and only over the weekend. I didn't even do a garage sale. Take whatever it is, and then, like, everything else, I just, like, dropped it at a donation place. So it was either one weekend of cleaning the whole house. I sold the cars like 2 weeks before moving to India, and I borrowed my friend's car for the last 2 weeks of my day. So once I got. And my lease was expiring, was aligned with my flight dates and everything.
Oh, great. Looks like the universe was conspiring for you.
Because I sold my home, that's how I took the lease. So I originally talked to my landlord accordingly to say, like, no, hey, I'm going to stay here for so many days. And, like, I gave him, like, 2 months notice saying that, like, no, I'm vacating on so-and-so date. So it kind of aligned things because of that advance notice. That is where I said, like, my company really gave me enough time to transition properly.
Got it. And did you sell your car through a third-party seller or through CarMax or something like that?
No. Everywhere, I tested it because I had time. I shopped around. It was nothing was a better option than selling it on Craigslist or selling it myself, kind of. I think I sold both of my cars on Craigslist. Selling the Mercedes was tough because you have very less people coming for it. Selling an Odyssey was like 1 day thing. Selling a Mercedes was like a 1 week thing.
Understood. And just because a lot of people ask this particular question in the groups and community, what did you do with your TV? Did you ship it back, or do you recommend people bringing it back to India or selling it off?
Technology is changing at a very faster pace than we think. So there's no point in bringing an old TV to India. So I sold my TV there for like probably 1/10 of the cost what I bought for, and I bought a brand new TV and shipped it to India.
Okay, that makes sense.
Along the way, I also bought one for my parents.
Great. Yeah, I don't know what to say, but every other week there's someone who comes in asking what to do with their TV. Should they bring it back to India? So, you know, this is always a never-ending question, sort of, which is why I decided to ask it. So that's good. Yeah. But coming back to India, how was your experience? You were away for so long time. Things would have changed. What was your initial reaction when you came back to India?
Yeah. So every time I used to come to India, I used to be like a guest staying at my parents' place, but I never used to carry my own phone. I never used to drive myself, pampered all the way, always had a lot of help around, all of those things, right? Mm-hmm. We used to stay in the, my parents' place is like with the other side of the city in Hyderabad, compared to like where I am right now, which is Gachibowli high-tech city area, where you have a lot of software companies. So whatever I've seen, the culture and world at my parents' place is very, very different than what it is actually here in the high-tech city area. That is one thing. And second, once I started to get independent myself by learning to drive, because I didn't drive for 15 years in India. So my parents never used to allow me to drive, but now we have automatic cars here. So it was easy to take the car and like, you know, drive around for a couple of hours and then comfortable. So once I started driving myself and having my own cell phone and having my own currency and with credit cards and everything, it was like a breeze. The first 15 days, I was all up and running. We moved into our apartment. We joined our kids in the school within the first 1 month. We were all up and running with everything, like maids coming in, services, all scheduled, all of those things. So the culture is very, very different than at parents' place versus the place where I live. When I say I live, it's like more of the community around, like, you know, expats return to India, people, a lot of them coming from many countries in the community, and the kind of software IT culture. Okay. So culture is amazing. And it was a surprise to me that like the level of maturity we have in terms of culture, cleanliness, access to services and luxuries.
How was driving in India for the first time? Was it scary or worse?
It was, I was excited that I could drive, that now that we have automatic cars, but it was equally scary. And to my bad luck, I got, because I don't know the directions here in the new area, I got into a place where there was a vegetable market going on. There was no way for me to go forward or go backward. And when I asked my wife to see if any other cars are coming, she was like, she was scared to see the traffic. I went to see the traffic and give me directions to say if I can move a little back or something. So it was super scary on the day one. So I saw the worst on that day, and then everything else was easy.
Got it. Like they say, if you can drive in India, you can drive anywhere in the world.
Anywhere. So even within India, I drove in the worst place possible, traffic, with narrow roads, with a lot of vegetable market, like a lot of two-wheelers going on both the sides, and like getting used to the 15 years of driving in US, looking over the shoulder, waiting, turning on the indicator, nothing works.
It's all based on intuition, isn't it?
Exactly, right? So that was tough in the first 1-2 days, and then I eventually got used to it.
Got it. You mentioned you have kids, and you mentioned you were looking for schools and everything. How was that process? Did you have any preferences, or were there things that you had to take care of? I mean, I'm asking this because this is also one of the things that many people in the community would be interested to know about. Mostly people are looking for like international schools so that the transition is smoother for the kids, because the assumption is that the curriculum is pretty much similar, or at least closer to what it is in the US. And I know there are problems like new languages that is to be learned and things like that. What was your experience there?
For me, the school search process was very straightforward, because one, I know where my company is and where my job is. So I know the office. Mm-hmm. And based on the office, my first primary criteria was to have the least commute possible, both for me and my kids. So commute was a very big thing, and we didn't want to put them into buses, school buses. We wanted to drive them ourselves. So commute was the biggest criteria. And the second most important thing is the syllabus. So IB syllabus is something that we nailed down, saying that like this is the culture, this is the curriculum we want our kids to go through. Mm-hmm. Given that like it's we could always move back and kind of get adjusted to this syllabus, even if we have to move back to US. So the syllabus and the proximity to home were very important. And given all of those criteria, we nailed down on Oak Ridge International School, which is IB syllabus and which is in the center of the city. And it's like 15 years of experience, got a lot of positive feedback from people I know, and it was easy. Yeah.
Okay. Did they have to learn new languages once they moved in, as in the kids?
Not really, because one thing what we did differently for our kids than most of our friends is we never taught them English as their first. So we only taught them Telugu, which is our native mm-hmm. language first. Mm-hmm. And then we taught them English as they got into the preschools and daycares. So because they already knew Telugu and they know English, it was a lot easier for them to adjust in terms of language.
Got it. That's good to know. So you're now in India, you've settled in. What changes have you seen in India from, you know, back 15 years when you left, and how it is right now? Do you see areas of improvement or concerns? What was your impression after settling in?
Yeah, first of all, at least in Hyderabad, we only had Hyderabad and Secunderabad when I went to US. And when I returned from US, we have another Cyberabad, which is completely a new place altogether. But Cyberabad, as the name speaks to itself, is a place where you have all of these IT companies and all of the IT culture, and where you have Google, Amazon, Facebook, you name it, everybody is here. So right. The big changes are the kind of culture, the kind of educated people around you. Not people previously, most of the people were like in businesses, less than companies. So then the big switch was about how many educated employees and how many opportunities you have as a software engineer, or for that matter, in any area. So the opportunities were like huge. Like I said, when I went to US, it was either gate exam and get a 10,000 job or go to the US. Now it's not that case. That's not the case anymore. You have like plenty of opportunities, and the companies in India have been flooded with funding from abroad. And now their only challenge is to keep the talent from going abroad. The salaries are like amazing for the right people, right talent. Salary is no bar for the right talent anymore in India. And what I'm seeing from Bangalore is like even actually it's kind of scary in some places as an employer, happy as a candidate. You get like amazing salaries, packages, like mind-blowing for the right. So it's huge opportunities, huge adaptation of internet digitization. And there's because like now with internet, people are able to, it was 15 years ago, it was hard to have a cell phone. And now every auto driver and rickshaw driver has a cell phone with internet on it, and who's able to manage his app and his business on the phone. So that's like huge development in digitization. And the third one is urbanization, right? Urbanization, like all of the apartments and communities are amazing, which were not there before. You have all of the swimming pool classes. We used to travel, drive so many miles for every class. You have to drive like 8 miles for a swimming class, and then like another 9 miles or 10 miles for a dance class in US. Mm-hmm. And then you have to run. My wife used to run between classes for both my kids in US. Here, we just take the lift elevator and like go downstairs. You have all your classes for both the kids. It's like amazing. The quality of life you are spending here in India is like amazing because of two reasons. One, you don't have to be running around classes. All of them happen at your doorsteps in the same community. Two, we used to have like 20 days holidays, and like most companies have like 20 days of personal leave. And we used to always save those 20 days for coming to India, because now right. The 20 days is something you can use for vacations four times a year. So all of the India that I missed seeing or like I wanted to show to my kids, I'm able to go to all of those places, and like we are enjoying those vacations like four times a year, 5 days vacation is amazing, which I never got in US.
That's awesome. Sudhir, I also see that you are a big advocate of entrepreneurship, and you're pretty much active in that area, specifically in Hyderabad. You know, being a place where there's a lot of activity. So do you think it's a good place or good time in India for people to come in and invest and start their own businesses? Do you know anyone who's done it? What is your advice to people who are thinking of entrepreneurship? Because we have a group as well, and there's a lot of questions people ask there about, you know, what is the right way to invest? What is the right way to get starting up? What would be your answer to that?
First of all, in terms of opportunities, as I said, just about the job opportunities, startup opportunities are like amazing in India. Mm-hmm. If you see from the news, I'm like India is striving towards like increasing the number of startups and building a better ecosystem around startups. If you see Narendra Modi, or if you see Hyderabad and Telangana with T-Hub, lot of incubators, many states, not just Telangana, right? Many states are having their own accelerators, incubators, startup programs. All of these things are happening at a pace that it never happened in India before. And talking about somebody in US coming and starting in India, I would say it takes like at least 3 to 6 months, if not 6 to 12 months, to understand the culture in India. Mm-hmm. But opportunities are there. Because we have like ton of problems to solve, right?
Right.
So
right.
Problems are opportunities for startups. So that's a check.
Right.
Money, yes. You've been living in US for so many years. You probably made enough money bootstrapping. You're good. Or you have a great network of investors. Amazing.
Right.
That's a check. So you right. have a problem. You have a money, and then you have talent too. Talent is like not everybody can go to US. You only have limited number of people who can go to US. Right? Every year in the quota, you do have access to talent, you do have access to money, you have a problem to solve. The only thing that you need to have is a passion and drive and understanding the problem and building a solution for India. We cannot bring in solutions from US and make it work for India. You've got to build a solution that works for India. If you see, for example, the difference between PayPal versus Paytm, right? PayPal is very different, and the way the credit card machines work in US is very different. But if you have to make it work for street vendors, Paytm is the answer.
Right.
So everything, fintech to agri-tech to HR tech, everything is changing. Everybody is embracing technology. You have like 700 plus million users, internet right. users in India. So there's like a lot of opportunity, lot of talent. It's just mm-hmm. that like, you know, we cannot be very far away from the ground and say that like, no, I don't know if this is going to work or not. I would encourage people to be on the ground, do their problem analysis, and then come up with the solutions that make sense to this audience.
Got it. That makes total sense. So we're getting towards the last part of the interview, but just a little bit of context, if you can provide about Shortlist, your startup. I believe it's an HR solutions startup, and you have the market is India and East Africa. Can you give me a little bit more context about what is it that you do?
Shortlist is helping companies hire people. The biggest difference is, I'm like, you can say it's a recruitment solutions. The biggest difference with Shortlist than the traditional recruiting models is that the traditional models always relied on your CV or a resume, which only tells like what you have done. It doesn't tell what you're capable of doing. What is your potential? So Shortlist is a way of about giving an opportunity to a candidate to showcase their skills, show their potential over pedigree, because most of the traditional hiring methods have been about pedigrees or the companies that you kind of work for. But very few people actually fall into that category. How do you find the diamond in all of the rest of the mine, right? Mm-hmm. That is where Shortlist comes into picture. And like, you know, we allow them to take assessments which are catered towards a job. And on the job performance is, so we have these assessments, and assessments allow candidates to showcase their talent, and which is how we place the candidates in the companies. So we've been serving both India and Africa for the last 3+ years. But like we have over 500 clients so far in 15 countries, although majority of them are in India and Kenya. We have office in Hyderabad, where you have all of the tech team, which I manage. And then we have an office in Bombay, and we have office in Nairobi, Kenya.
Great. So I'll end this interview with the last question, which is, if I were to ask you, what are the three things that you will advise new people who are actually in the US planning to return maybe soon, or maybe next year, or maybe the year after that, if you could tell them three things to prepare and make the transition smooth, what would it be?
My experience has been, thinking has been tough. Actually doing it is what was a lot easier. So don't be afraid. and don't be thinking too much about like how the transition is going to happen. If you have decided to move, I would say move on immediately. It doesn't help to marinate for a longer time thinking about the move and like over planning or something, because things change very differently when you were there versus when you are on the ground here in India. So that is the first thing. Second, there will be some transition, and everybody's situations could be different. What works for me may not work for you, or vice versa. So I would say, do not listen to people in terms of the problems. Think about like, you know, listen to the problems and do not be afraid of those problems. Rather, I would look at the problems and say, how can I solve them? When I came to India, everybody said like, traffic is a disaster. You get stuck for hours. And I said, okay, fine. I'm going to plan my home and school and office accordingly. And I've never stuck in traffic on my regular days. Definitely on an occasional day or a weekend, or if I'm going to different places, it's fine. But on my regular commute days, that's not a problem, right? So I would take these problems, and rather than being scared about them, rather plan around them. Third one, people, furniture, right? A lot of people are trying, I see a lot of people carrying furniture from US to India. What I see as the biggest challenge was about like, if you're renting a home in India, you don't know if your furniture is going to fit in, first of all. And most of these homes are furnished, refurnished, which means like they don't allow your new furniture here. So it was very easy for me to get rid of all of the furniture in US and move into a well-furnished apartment in the beginning before you actually move into your own home or like start to buy your own furniture. Because what we like there can hardly fit into the place. I know we have a lot of bonding with these things, but and we have some appreciation for the items that we purchase in US. But trust me, there are like a lot more options and a lot of great quality stuff, even in India, that you are going to love it. So do not get attached to the items, because we are moving to India for people and love and less about items. And we have a lot of options here in India after you move.
Got it. That's absolutely well said. Don't overplan, find solutions. And third one was, don't get attached to things. Start everything new. You have a lot of options here in India. Don't have to bring your TV. You can get better ones, essentially.
Yeah.
Great. Awesome. This was absolute pleasure for me talking to you, Sudhir. Thanks for making out this time and spending time with us, sharing all your experiences. I'm sure a lot of people will find this interesting and find it useful. How can we reach you if at all someone has a question that you can answer?
Yeah. Likewise, Mani, first of all, thank you for arranging this podcast. And let me appreciate you for all of the great things you're doing to help returning Indians, and how close you're getting to each and everybody in helping. I totally admire, and I'm fascinated how much time you have to do all of these things in addition to your full-time job. Huge kudos there. On people reaching out to me, I'm on the Return to India WhatsApp group. People could ping me on my WhatsApp number, 9505-898-958.
Awesome. Great. Again, thanks, Sudhir. We'll talk soon. Thanks for all the wisdom you shared with us.
Thank you, Mani. Very nice talking to you.